Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
3-2. Here it is. Drive into left field. Way back. Refsnyder looks up. Adios. Three-run homer for Guerrero. Another total bullpen meltdown in Toronto. And it is 4-2 Blue Jays.
Another bad loss for the Red Sox last night. Make that two in a row in Toronto. They're just 2-5 against the Jays this year.
And the Jays aren't good.
No, in fact,
I picked the Jays to win the division for like four straight years, and this was not one of them. And you're like, they're down. Like they re-signed Guerrero, which was obviously affected the Red Sox future plans, perhaps. But they're not that good.
The Jays hadn't won back-to-back games since the last time they played the Red Sox when they beat them three times in a row.
Yeah, so they're still under 500, aren't they?
They pretty much only beat up on the Red Sox. The Jays are
losing
15-16.
It's like five of their 15 wins have come against Sox.
Correct. Yeah. Good way of putting it. Yikes. Red Sox are one game over 500. Now one game into the month of May. So how do you feel about the Red Sox at this point? Is it time to worry a little bit that they've underachieved? 617-779-7937. We'll get you a four-pack of questions in the Friday four-pack coming up at 11:30, as we do every Friday here on Jones and Keefe. We have the Week in Review at 12:45, so stay tuned for it. A couple more names on the text line, Keefe.
Or to be worried about?
Maybe we should be concerned about. Oh, we gave you a top five Friday. If you want to seek those out at Jones and Keefe on socials, it'll be up there shortly. We both had Bill number one on our list. Let's see. What are some good ones here?
Alec Baldwin. See, I'm not like worried about it. Like he's
Alec
in a bad
Baldwin,
way.
I couldn't be less concerned about.
That's all on him.
I don't feel bad about him at all.
No, that's on him.
Run around shooting people in the face. I don't feel bad for him.
Does he have a reality show on HBO now? Did that pop up when you were
on some level I feel bad about him for who he's married to. So
yeah, that's
actually,
true.
You know what?
It's a little Belichick-like.
Yeah.
Not the stuff from the film set, but like that part of it.
Yeah, I don't feel bad for him, but yikes, that's a nightmare.
That's a whole.
It might be a deserved nightmare.
That's a whole thing.
I'm surprised you guys didn't have Tara Reid on the list.
Oh, yeah.
How's she doing? I feel like she's doing better.
I thought was a good bounce back for her.
Me too.
I thought that was good.
I think she might be in a Lohan category.
She was in like eight movies in a row on sci-fi.
Well, at one point we were worried about her, but now she's back, kind of.
Yeah. Now she's a working actress again,
I believe. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the content is. Text line says Nitro.
Your guy Nitro.
My guy Nitro.
That's fair.
I looked him up.
Should we be worried?
Danny Lee Clark doing fine.
Okay.
He did write a book about surviving a heart attack at a very young age.
All right, so he would have been on the list, but now he's all right.
But he's good now. And then maybe the best one, Keith. This is one we probably should have on the list. How about Sammy Sosa?
Yeah, Sosa should be on there. Another guy. Was Sosa's peak right around the same time as Britney Spears' peak?
Sure. Yeah.
So if you told,
right?
If you told a young Rich Keefe that Britney Spears and Sammy Sosa 20 years later were going to look and act the way that they do now, I would not have believed you.
Wouldn't have believed it.
No.
Would have ruined your worldview is what it would have done, quite frankly.
Yeah, that would rock you.
Red Sox at this point in time, as we said, one game over 500.
Not great.
It's back-to-back bad losses. If last night, I don't think last night was worse than the night prior, but those are two bad losses. Uh-huh. Abreu just butchers a ball in right field. And then the next batter, it's over the fence as the Blue Jays go from down 2-1. And Tanner Houck pitched very well. You waste another good performance. Houck has had like two good performances. They wasted both of them because Abreu can't catch. And the Blue Jays go in front 4-2. You lose that game last night. Injuries piling up as well. Christian Campbell, a scratch in the lineup with some sort of rib issue, which doesn't sound great. Walker Buehler was on his way back to Boston. I'm assuming he's here by now. I don't even know if they've announced a starter for this game coming up, but I think the supposition was that Hunter Dobbins could be in the mix to replace him. So Walker Buehler out of your rotation. Campbell, who knows? Marcelo Meyer, if you want to throw this one on the pile, was scratched yesterday in Worcester with a back issue. He's supposed to play shortstop. So is it time to get concerned about the Red Sox after a month plus?
Yeah, I thought they'd be a lot better than they are. I mean, they're one game over 500 because you can always go to the counter, and Bradford brought this up yesterday, and it's true. The American League's not great. Nobody's running away with it in the American League. You're not in the same division. I know the Dodgers have come back down to earth, but like they got out to a really good start. So you're whatever you are, game and a half, two games out of first place. But just looking at them, should they be one game over 500 at this point? No, they should be a lot better than that. And it's some of these games that they certainly should have won last night and they should have won the night before, and they find ways to blow both games. You've gotten some pretty good pitching performances, right? The last two great ones, two very, like, you should have won the Tanner Houck start last night.
Giolito.
You should have won Giolito's start.
Yep.
Whether you agree with putting him out there for the sixth inning or not, you should have won the game. He was up 6-3 when he left, so they should have won that game. And then last night, this is where I do start to look to Alex Cora a little bit. And you know me, baseball manager, I don't think gives you a ton of wins or takes away a ton of wins, right? It's you know, managing personalities, it's a grind of a season, but it's way different than, say, football. But there are individual decisions you can make within a game. Now, I agreed with him. Giolito for the sixth inning, fine. That's okay. Last night, though, Vlad Guerrero with two guys on, not just two guys on second and third, one out, and you pitch to him, and he socks a dinger.
Right.
Now, I know he hasn't hit a lot of dingers this year, but it's still Vlad Guerrero.
With first base open.
Yeah, first base open.
So, yeah, that one.
I would have put him on, and I guess, you know, at the time, you'd be like, oh, is that revisionist history? Because you do have another guy coming up who can smash a dinger.
Right, I was just going to say, Santander just did it the day before, and
but
he's on
least,
deck, right?
You set up the double play, and you take the bat out of Guerrero's hand. So I would have done that. I think that is a decision you can look at Alex Cora and say, is that the one that, would you do that one again? And, you know, if so, why? Because
yeah.
I think that was a mistake.
I watched a chunk of Cora after the game. I don't think he was asked about it after the game last night.
Why would he be?
But maybe he'll get asked about that today with the Red Sox back at Fenway taking on the Twins, I believe. So I think that was questionable, Keith. And again, let's not let Abreu off the hook, because Abreu just,
sure.
I mean, that's a horrendously bad play.
Uh-huh.
And he's a good defensive player, but it's a bad play that he made last night on Bo Bichette, which allowed runners to be at second and third with the base open. I'd rather pitch to Santander than Guerrero. You're right. Guerrero hasn't had a lot of home runs this season.
It's still Guerrero.
But I would rather pitch to Santander. I don't really view that as a second guess, but if you do, whatever, fine. It's a second guess for the manager. Should he have pitched to Vladdy in that spot? The answer would be no.
Santander, by the way, does have power. He's also hitting
like 170, right?
178.
Is that what it is? Yeah, 178.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think to me that's an easy one on who to pitch to. Never mind. As you said, Keith, you're setting up the force everywhere. You're setting up the double play. That's a pretty easy one that Cora missed out on for whatever reason. I did not have an issue with this. I'm curious, because, and I'll stay consistent. The night before, I'm like, I wondered if they could have got Giolito out after five innings. Would you have stuck with Houck longer before going to the bullpen last night?
No, seven innings is plenty. Like, and I think with him, like, let's leave on a high note. Let's get you out of there. And, you know, if it was five or six, maybe you have that question. But, yeah, he was rolling. I mean, the pitch count was still really low.
He was only at 86 after seven, and he was rolling. I agree. Yeah. I would not have stuck with him. I think they made the right move by going to Slayton. Just like the game before, it's hard to get too mad at Garrett Whitlock for giving up a bomb when he's been good. It's hard to get too mad at Slayton for giving up a bomb, although Slayton's numbers are not as good as I guess I thought.
No, they're not. I mean, last night really
kind of
skews him.
He had one really bad outing in the beginning of the season that skews his numbers.
It does.
A little bit.
But I feel like largely he's been good and trustworthy in that spot. So I don't really have an issue with that aspect of it. I have an issue with pitching to Vlad.
You go the inning before, I guess, but I'm not doing that either. Meaning, like, Houck has six shutout innings.
Do you need to go back to him and give up the bomb to Varsho?
But I feel like he's been pretty consistent where he has gone maybe that extra inning even early in the year where I didn't think it would happen. We saw it the other night with Giolito. We've seen it a couple of times with Crochet, and he did it there with Tanner Houck. So even though he gives up the bomb, overall, I mean, seven innings, one run, no walks, six strikeouts. best start of the year for Hauk.
Do you agree with this? You guys talk about baseball like it's 1995. Alex Cora doesn't decide who they're going to pitch. That comes from someone on a laptop that may not even be in the stadium.
See, I don't know about that one.
See, I don't either.
I mean, a lot of it is from a nerd on a laptop. Yeah. I agree with that, but I don't know about that specific one.
I think he's given piles of data to go over and use, and if he doesn't do what they want him to do, he's going to have to answer to it. But I think in-game pitching decisions like that, Cora's making.
Intentional walks and stuff like that?
Yeah.
I would think.
But, and I would think when they give the hook to Hauk. Yeah. And when he didn't give it to Giolito the game before, I think those sort of things are on the manager. Now, again, he's probably going to hear from a whole bunch of dweebs with reams of data yelling at him.
Including
if they don't
Preslo.
Like what he did. Right.
Yeah.
So I agree they have a lot of input. But that in-game stuff, I think the manager, it's the one thing the manager actually has some autonomy in.
Yeah.
Shaughnessy weighed in on this today.
Okay.
In the Boston Globe. He says, after all the good vibes and money spent and the Bregman, Crochet, Bueller, Chapman additions, the 2025 Red Sox went into the weekend one game worse, 17-16, than they were after 33 games a year ago. So they're not even as good at this point on the calendar as they were last year. And we all agree they're way more talented. And on top of that,
yeah,
I think most of the new additions have worked out pretty well. I mean,
Bregman's been a machine.
Definitely Crochet and Bregman have worked out spectacular.
Chapman's been good.
Yeah.
Overall, Bueller, I think more good than bad, but yeah, not perfect.
He's got a good record. I'll pull up the exact
number. Well, it's funny because last year you had two guys to start the year. Tanner Houck and Cutter Crawford were insane. And then it obviously wasn't really sustainable. I mean, Houck had a good season, but it wasn't really sustainable for them all year. I mean, but I certainly thought they'd be a lot better.
But that's a fair way of putting it. Bueller's been more bad than good. Hasn't been great, but more bad, more good than bad. Yeah, more good than bad for Bueller for sure.
No, but you look up and down the lineup, and like the one guy that stands out is still Tristan Casas as far as like the regular players. You're like, all right, so you have one guy that's not hitting, so that shouldn't sink your team. And they're scoring plenty of runs. I know last night was only two, but where they rank in the league is pretty high. The pitching and the bullpen, like, it feels like, all right, it shouldn't be that bad. I know the defense was a bigger issue, and it still pops up here and there. But the fact that they're only one game over 500 in May is a little surprising. I thought they were going to be certainly better than they were last year. I thought they'd be threatening, like, 90 wins this season.
Here, to me, is the difference. Last year, you knew they were overachieving, and they overachieved. You're reminded of this watching, and we were two of the only people who watched the game, of watching the clubhouse. Yeah. They were... I mean, right up until the trade deadline, they were really in it.
Yeah, they were.
And you forget how long they were in it last year. But we all kind of knew what the team was, and they were playing over their heads, and the other shoe was always going to drop if they didn't do anything at the deadline, and they didn't, and it dropped. And I think that was predictable. I mean, this team feels like it is underachieving, which means, I mean, you could read that and say that's disappointing. It is. But you could also read it and say, once they get this figured out, there's much more ceiling for this team than there was a year ago.
Oh, yeah.
And much more of a chance they're going to be in it at the end than the team a year ago, which predictably fell off.
Yeah, because last year there were so many spots where you're like, well, they need this. They need this, then they need this. This team, it feels like they have a lot of the guys in place. They just need to get it all going together, right? Like some of, you know, Bregman's defensive miscues at third base earlier in the year. You're like, all right, I assume he's going to figure that out. We're still waiting on Casas to figure it out at the plate. We're waiting for Tanner Houck to figure it out. Maybe last night goes a long way and Tanner Houck pitching a little bit better. And if Giolito is at least decent and he takes, let's say he takes all the Sean Newcomb starts from the start of the year. Like, okay, now you might have something in place where, I mean, we were just talking yesterday about how there doesn't seem to be an obvious spot for Roman Anthony or Marcelo Meyer. So like, that goes to show you, like, the roster is built pretty well. They're just, like, fumbling away some of these games. These two this week are really stand out because, like, what a swing that is. I mean, they could be, not that it's an amazing record, but they could easily be sitting here 19-14.
Yeah.
Right? And you're like, okay, kind of on pace to where they need to be.
Yeah.
But they lose the bullpen kind of blows these games. Maybe a coaching decision blows these games. And now you're talking about something completely different.
I'll highlight this. Dave Schoenfield at ESPN went through and graded all the teams in the first month of the year. He gave him a B-, is that the same grade Bradfo gave yesterday? B-,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah.
Same grade. So he gave him a B-. He went through and kind of highlighted how everybody's played. But he had this line in there. He said, the Red Sox had the easiest schedule in the majors in the month of April, according to Baseball Reference, including
White Sox, Blue Jays.
7 games against the White Sox, exactly, Keith, where they were only 4-3 against Chicago.
Which is what they were last year, too, against the White Sox, who had a historically bad year.
So, you know, put another way, not only have they underachieved, but they underachieved against a wretched schedule, like the worst in baseball, according to Baseball Reference. A bunch of games against the White Sox, throw the Blue Jays on top of it, they're 2-5 against Toronto. So that puts it in a certain light. You mentioned how are you going to get guys like Roman Anthony into the lineup? I mean, it's a bad way to do it if Christian Campbell is hurt, but let's say Campbell goes on the IL. He was scratched last night. No update from Cora after the game other than just a quick, you know, he's dealing with something. Maybe there'll be more details today. Campbell was going to play in center field last night. I think Ref Snyder replaced him in left and Duran slid over, I think is what they eventually did. So Campbell's been in the mix in the outfield is my only point. Would that be an avenue to get Roman Anthony to the bigs? Or if he wasn't scratched yesterday,
I
would
say Meyer's hurt.
Well, now that we're talking it out, Meyer was scratched, but...
Oh, right.
He was scratched with back stiffness, but...
Yeah, no, I know.
But do you think they scratched him to...
I don't know. So if everybody's healthy, let's just say... So let's say Campbell's down and it's an extended IL, then wouldn't Meyer just be the obvious second baseman? Unless you want to do this, do you move Rafaela to second base and put Anthony in the outfield? Say, Rafaela, you're the second baseman now until Campbell comes back. I mean, look, Anthony, you're in the outfield with Duran and Abreu.
Here's what I'm saying. If Campbell's going on IL, and there's no reports of that yet, he was a scratch, we're just kind of playing it out, gaming it out.
No, 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 no.
If he's scratched, one of those two should be up.
100%. Like, what are you going to have David Hamilton start every game?
Thank you. So Anthony should be up in the outfield, and you can play Rafaela wherever. Or Marcelo Meyer should be up. Maybe he's scratched for a back issue. Maybe he's scratched for other reasons. They scratched Hunter Dobbins yesterday, and he's expected to replace Walker Buehler in the rotation.
No, but if Campbell's legitimately out for 10 games or more, whatever it has to be, right?
Call one of those guys up.
Yes. And, you know, maybe it provides a little bit of spark or whatever. It's not going to solve everything. It's not going to fix your bullpen late in games, but whatever. Like, that would be one thing you can do.
But I would say, you know, that's not the way you want to do it. You don't want to lose Campbell. The idea was, well, you know, Sadon Rafaela, they're replacing him because he's not hitting. And, oh, by the way, he's falling asleep in the outfield defensively on key plays and extra innings. Or Abreu. Like, Abreu had a nice start. He's still hitting very well. Butchered that ball last night. Like, at some point, you say, Abreu's a good player, but we have a better one sitting in Worcester. Like, ideally, those are the guys you're taking out. Yeah. Campbell's not ideal, but maybe there's an avenue to get those guys up here, which I think with the team underachieving for a month, and B-minus to me means they're underachieving. Bradfoe gave that grade. ESPN gave that grade. If they've been underachieving, getting a shot in the arm from a player like Anthony and or Meyer, it could be what the team needs.
Yeah, so, I wonder if... either Willie or Abreu, who got out to the hottest start possible, or Sadon Rafaela, it gets to the point where one of those guys proves it, like, all right, good, useful player, not an everyday player, right. And then that paves the way for Anthony or Meyer.
At that point, you trade him for pitching at the deadline, you call both of those guys up.
Also fair.
They better not wait till the deadline to call these guys up.
Well, no, but I mean, though.
They're going to play the service time game either way.
Yeah, it feels like
But the service time game starts way before the debt. That's like...
No,
that's,
I know.
That's
like
definitely
starting
in July.
You're not going to force him into the lineup.
Well, the injuries might get him in, is what it looks like.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm wondering. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Campbell's back in the lineup today. Who knows? But I'm just saying, if he's not and he's going on the IL, who are you replacing him with from Worcester? Hopefully one of those two. 617-779-7937. You can jump in here on Jones and Keefe. It's a Friday, which means you have a four-pack of questions, the Friday four-pack.
Going on.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through 2 cartons in 1 day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
What's in today's Friday four pack?
Friday four pack here on Jones and Keefe. We're brought to you by Jackson Lumber and Millwork. Visit Jackson Lumber and Millwork for all your residential, remodeling, or commercial building materials and supplies at Jackson Lumber and Millwork, providing solutions and delivering results since 1946. We'll get to Elliot Wolf calling into question Drake May and his leadership. Honestly, just when the guy was starting to get like a little bit of credit for fake making all these nice picks in the Patriots draft.
Yeah.
A good way to get yourself fired.
Elliot, do less.
Yeah, seriously. Go on SiriusXM and question the leadership abilities of your quarterback. So we'll do that coming up again about 15 minutes from now. We got a four-pack of questions for you on a Friday. What's first up today, Billy?
First up, who will throw more touchdowns next season, Drake May or Caleb Williams?
I'm pretty confident it's going to be Caleb Williams. Few reasons.
I don't like it. I don't like this answer, but go ahead.
All right, so Caleb Williams last year played every game, and he threw 20 touchdowns. Nothing to get excited about, right? Mm-hmm. That's barely won a game. He has Ben Johnson now as his coach, who under Ben Johnson, Jared Goff last year, I think, threw 37 touchdowns. They have a good receiving core. They added a tight end in the first round. I think they're going to be throwing it a lot more. Meanwhile, Mike Vrabel's already talked about not wanting to chuck it a lot. I think they're going to run the ball a little bit more. So Drake May could still have a very good season, but if you're just going head-to-head who throws more touchdowns, I'll take Caleb Williams.
So I'm just going to side with who I think is the better quarterback. Williams is more talented. Williams does have more around him and probably has the better offensive coach. We'll see if he has the better coach or not. Definitely has the better offensive coach. But he just might not be very good.
That's not always the key, though.
No, it's
Sam
not.
Sam Darnold was top five in touchdown passes.
That's
last
fair.
Year.
That's totally fair. But Ben Johnson, let's see if he knows what he's doing as a head coach. Like, I had high hopes for the Bears last year, and they won 4 or 5 games. They stunk. And they had a lot of weapons last year. There was a lot of firepower around him, and they stunk. So Caleb Williams just might not be very good. Very talented. Might not be good.
Yeah.
Look, you know what? Drake May might not be good for all we know. I think Drake May, I'm a believer. And I'm going to side with the quarterback that I just think is a better player. I'm going to go with May to throw more touchdowns than Caleb Williams.
You know who had more touchdown passes than Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes last year?
Oh, I mean, Mahomes was low. Are you going to say Caleb Williams?
Bo Nix.
Nice.
Bo Nix, baby. Nice. Wasn't just Bo Pix. It was Bo Pix early. Then but he got that out of his system.
But again, so the quarterback change, the coaching change is significant for Caleb Williams. Otherwise, it's like it's a lot of the same stuff.
It is, but it's a coaching change for both. I think both will improve. Like Drake May also didn't play as many games last year, so I'm answering this question assuming they both play all season. But I'll say Caleb Williams at the end of the year is more.
Okay. What else do we have, Billy?
What's been the best story of the NBA playoffs so far?
Ooh, let me go on this one.
Go ahead.
I think J.J. Redick getting pantsed the first round against Minnesota. Out there playing his guy, the graphic in game 4,
yeah,
they showed it so many times I got so annoyed by it, but I'm happy they did in retrospect because it makes Redick look like such a clown.
Apparently he was acting like a kid before the game. Did you hear that story from Windhorst?
Yeah. Oh.
He was saying, he was like, Reggie Miller had to calm him down before the game because he was acting like a child.
Reggie Miller had to talk him down because Redick had already stormed off prior to the game.
Yeah.
Because he was yelling at a reporter for questioning about playing his whole team in the second half. So Redick ran his team into the ground. LeBron, the show's GOAT. No one on this show would ever question
That's
LeBron.
That's not true.
But he's old. You can't play him for an entire half.
Plays these guys the whole game.
If you do play them for entire halves and they don't sit down and LeBron does nothing in the fourth quarter again of game four, I'm going back a little bit.
Right.
Then we should look at you as the head coach. And he doesn't want to take any blame for it. So I think the best story so far of the NBA playoffs is J.J. Redick getting pantsed, exposed, embarrassed, however you want to put it. I think that's the best story.
Now, I'm going to piggyback off of that. The best story is LeBron James proving that it was a failure for him to go to L.A. He handpicked J.J. Redick. He handpicked that guy.
Yeah, well, that's true.
All he does is handpick coaches. Yep. He's had a million coaches. I can't even keep track of all the coaches
He'll have a million and one soon.
He will have another one. They should probably get rid of J.J. Redick. Yeah. But getting bounced in the first round, there's been so many years where they either lose in the first round or don't make the playoffs at all. They're actually the higher seed this year, and they just got bullied by Anthony Edwards. Lakers losing in the first round after the Luka trade and after people like, oh, no, they figured it out. And all since that, they're really good defensively. And all LeBron's got this second life about him.
LeBron,
they're about to go on a run.
LeBron would be third on my list with the Lakers. Redick is one. And then I'd look at Luka. You see Redick also called out Luka?
Yeah.
He called it. He said,
we got to get in shape.
We need guys in championship shape.
It's like, I don't know how many guys are playing 48 minutes a night there, JJ. You might want to give this guy a rest here and there.
No, but like, I'm not letting LeBron.
They're all pointing fingers at each other. LeBron was like, Anthony Davis wanted a center. You hear him say that?
Yeah.
Then he got traded. It's like, wait, do you want Luka or do you not want Luka? I can't make heads or tails.
I didn't love that trade for the Lakers when they
dribble,
made it.
Dribble, fat.
That guy actually who he was talking about was killing it last night.
I didn't love the trade for the Lakers. I mean, clearly it went way worse for Dallas than I expected it to. But I don't think Luka comes out of it looking good. JJ comes out of it looking terrible. I agree. LeBron doesn't come out of it looking good either. I'd have him personally lower on the list, but that's the best story of the NBA playoffs. LeBron
getting knocked out in the first round is definitely the best story in the NBA. Yes.
Okay. What else, Billy?
Who is the Red Sox best player?
This is tough.
Yeah.
I think I know how you're going to answer. Probably know how I'm going to answer. I would go Bregman.
Oh, no, I wouldn't.
I would not go with a starting pitcher because they're not in the lineup every day. They're not impacting it every day. I wouldn't go Devers. I considered Duran, who I love at the top of the order, getting things going. And I think after a bit of a slow start, maybe where some hits weren't dropping in, I think his numbers have started to pick up. I'd go with Bregman. He has, I think, helped change the lineup, not the team success yet. But he's helped change the lineup right in the middle of the order. He's hitting like crazy. He's been worth every penny. I would vote Bregman.
I am going to go Garrett Crochet. And I normally go kind of away from starting pitchers. I get your point about guys that are in the lineup every single day. But at some point, if you're ranking major league players, you got to have pitchers on the list somewhere. And so I think if you're taking the Red Sox guys and you're putting them in some order, I think he is their best guy. He's got, what, a 2 ERA on the season. He himself is 3-2, but I believe the team is 5-2 in the 7 games that he has started. He's a true ace. There's probably not many pitchers I'd put on the list even, but he's one of them. You know, he's gone like 5 innings has been the shortest start each time. So, you know, once he goes out there, it's usually a day the bullpen can kind of rest a little bit. I think Bregman and Duran are good, kind of like they're right there. Like those guys should be. I don't know if Duran will be an all-star. He's got to pick it up a little bit. But like those are like all-star caliber players. But Crochet is like a Cy Young candidate. So I would say he's their best player.
This is helpful from the Twitch chat. Turbo Dangerfield says Bregman for position player, Crochet for pitcher. Well, thank you.
You got to pick one,
now
Turbo.
Pick one. Billy, why don't you break the tie? Who's the best player on the Red Sox? I say Bregman. He says Crochet. Either a write-in or who do you think out of those players?
Ooh, that is tough. I'm going to go with Bregman just because Bregman is 4 at-bats a game. Crochet, I got to wait every 5th, 6th day.
Yeah, it hurt. I mean, that hurts him.
Yeah.
But, like, there was a time when, like, Pedro was the best player on the team.
For sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, like, obviously. But, again, like, it comes, like, I know every day I'm going to get a Bregman, a few Bregman at-bats.
Definitely.
Bregman right now is one of the best players in the league.
Yeah, that's with all the errors that have hopefully at least for the time being.
I think he's like tied for the most hits or extra base hits. He's up there too.
He's
do we ever settle on a nickname for him? Not to open up that
Foghorn Breghorn. I think he's fourth. Yeah, right. He's fourth in WAR. People like WAR. Where's only Judge, Tatis, and Pete Alonso have a higher WAR right now.
I got two of those players on my ding dong team. There.
Yeah, nice. I have the other one.
How about that?
Yeah, Fernando Tatis having a nice little year.
Sick brag, bro.
No big deal.
Somehow neither of us are in first.
No big deal.
I don't know. Keith got a bunch of home runs last night, so.
Oh, Vladdy? Things who else you got?
Bobby Witt hit a three-run home run.
Thank you, Bobby.
So two.
I can't remember who else he had.
I had a bunch of home runs.
Oh, I saw, I was like, Keith's racking up home runs tonight.
Look out. There's only one way to go for our squad.
Okay, that's so Keith had a bunch of home runs. He had two.
I don't want to jinx it.
I don't remember who his fourth player is, so.
I don't want to jinx it, but Fernando.
Yeah, I racked up girlfriends.
Fernando Tatis could be on 40-40 watch by
I was upset. I was speaking of sniped picks. You sniped Tatis for me, so yeah. I was. That's a good pick by you.
That's a good GM pick.
Sick brag, bro.
What's our last entry here?
Final
bro?
Question: what's worse, applauding at the end of a movie or when your plane lands?
So both are completely unnecessary.
Yes,
and I've been on a plane brag and in a movie theater brag when people have clapped at the end, and I'm always a little confused.
You must have been to way more movies where people clap than planes, though.
Well, I don't know, because I feel like people, at least one idiot claps every time the plane lands. I feel like I go to plenty of movies where people don't clap. They just get up and leave, but there are times where they do.
Have you ever done it at either?
No.
I've never clapped at either. I've been on a flight where the plane clapped, and I was like, good job by this pilot, because this was rocky. I did not clap,
turbulence?
But it was.
Oh, you were like, I get it.
It was a sketch. I got that one. There was one I got.
Yeah, I'd be more likely to like kiss the floor than I would be to clap.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
At least that might make a little bit more sense, because maybe the pilot hears you, and he's like, yeah, good for me.
Good for me.
Well, the actors aren't at the showing. Unless you're like in an LA and they're like screening talk or something like that.
Or Jack Black comes to tell you not to throw chickens.
Yeah, right. If Jack Black's there and you want to give him a round of applause, I guess that makes, you're like, now you're at like a play and the people can hear you. But that happens. Like people are clapping at the end of a movie. You're
so,
like, I don't know.
I think if you would have asked me 6 months ago, I would have said it's more embarrassing on a flight.
Well,
with all the aviation mishaps, I think now I get that one a little bit more. I go movie. I would go movie. It's unnecessary. No one can hear it, as you just said.
Right.
So
right.
More
my
unnecessary.
Is the biggest ovation you saw at a movie or you were there for?
Oh, probably either Infinity War or Endgame. No. Actually, not Infinity War. Infinity War, people ended and they were all just like, what
do you
happened?
Count,
Endgame. Probably Endgame.
Do you count when you're taking like your kid to it? Kids clap at like all the kids' movies I take them to. They all clap.
So Jones, was the biggest applause you saw at a children's movie?
Well, so I think in all seriousness, I think the biggest applause I remember
Moana
from
too.
My childhood. No, that got a big pop. That Moana too.
Yeah, yeah.
No, as a child, I'm pretty sure I'm pretty sure the theater clapped for The Mask when I saw The Mask. I'm pretty sure that got an ovation.
Well, Cameron Diaz, you know.
Yeah, maybe it's like that. It made an impact on a young Jones. Like
Requiem for a Dream. Place went nuts.
No, but yeah, Moana 2 probably these
Moana
days.
2.
Big pop.
That
yeah,
could have been.
Pop Patrol movie. Kids love them.
People they get excited about.
Yeah,
it,
I think it's unnecessary, and I don't clap. My son's clapping. The kids they're with are clapping. I'm looking at all of them like
guys, we don't need to do this.
Yeah,
so I'm gonna leave you here.
Yeah,
sort of enjoy it, acknowledge it, talk amongst yourself, like your friends, and be like, yeah, it was a good movie.
Yeah, Lucas, do we clap on the couch when a movie's done, or like
you know, it's the same thing?
It's the same exact idea.
So I don't think I've ever been a part of like an applause, but have you guys seen Uncut Gems?
Of course.
So I was at that movie. You saw that in the theater, and that was like the most an audience ever like gasped.
Sick brag, bro.
Oh yeah, you're like
most they what?
Gasped.
Gasped.
Like a theater of just like.
Well, because you were
shocked.
Holding your breath the whole movie because it was just so.
It was a huge anxiety attack if you're a gambler. Like I didn't feel it
because
I'm not a degenerate, but like I can get why people were losing their minds.
It was pretty intense. Are you watching The Rehearsal? By the way, you know the Nathan Fielder show.
No, you were telling.
It's about aviation. This season.
Oh wait,
so season 2 of The Rehearsal.
No, I watched the first season of that. Was that?
Which is wild. I can't even describe that show. It's unlike any other show ever.
Was that when they like, it was.
He like recreate stuff. And like.
Yeah. And one of the episodes was recreating
a guy on his trivia team. He wanted to like come clean that he like never actually graduated from law school.
What was his show where like the lady wanted to see what it was like to like raise a kid? What was
that? Yeah, that's also
the rehearsal.
He did a few different things in season 1.
Yeah, yeah, I did see. I didn't realize there was a second season of that.
So it just came out like 2 episodes in. And the timing of it is bizarre because they must have filmed it a while ago, but it's about, like, plane crashes. I don't know what's going on.
Hmm.
I watched that show. I'm just, like, so confused on how they even do it. It's why there's nobody. It's the most unique show going.
Nathan For You, hard to beat. That's a good show.
I didn't see all of that. I've seen, like, clips and stuff.
Nathan For You was good.
Yeah.
Nathan, I
the rehearsal could be a hard watch.
I don't know that I love the. I didn't love the first season of The Rehearsal.
Yeah,
there were
parts
that I liked.
I
didn't realize there was a second season.
Well, they brought the kid in. That was really strange.
It was
like, is this kid in on it?
Yeah,
or is he not?
So what did she do? It was like the kid advanced at like a really rapid age to see what it was like to be a mom.
But then like the kid thought that he was like his dad and like was having these weird conversations. Then you didn't know what part of the show was real and what was fake anymore.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't like this. I don't feel right.
I don't feel right.
The show's nuts though.
Okay. So where do we land on that? Clapping in a movie theater, I think, is where we land
yes.
on that.
Yeah. Yes, yes,
okay,
yes,
perfect. Yes. It's the Friday 4-Pack here on Jones and Keefe. We do it every Friday at 11:30. Let's get to Elliot Wolf questioning the leadership of Drake May. We'll do that next.
Baseball's all about the games, and the best in daily gaming is on the MLB app, where every day starts with new puzzles and challenges. Test your skills with MLB Pickle, the ultimate mystery player challenge, and Immaculate Grid, where stats and strategy collide, or chase the $5.6 million jackpot and beat the streak, presented by BetMGM. And for an all-new spin on fantasy sports, there's Spinball, the game's official home for games, is on the MLB app. MLB trademarks used with permission. No purchase necessary. Restrictions apply. For official rules, go to MLB.com/play/official rules.
Yeah, I mean, Drake's been a consummate teammate and worker. I mean, I think that's the first thing that stands out, and he also has some talent. So, you know, anytime you can combine the three of those things, you've got a chance to be pretty good. And he's come in and just put his head down and worked. I think one area that I know he's going to take a step forward and has already is in his leadership. You know, as a rookie, you know, sometimes maybe it's not, you feel like it's not your place to speak up, but those times are over for him now. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of people looking at him for those leadership moments, and he's certainly up to the task.
You can certainly take that as a compliment for Drake May. Didn't really know his place as a rookie. He's going to come in. I'm sure he's going to be much more of a leader this season. And if you want to look at it that way, go right ahead. That was Elliot Wolf yesterday on SiriusXM. That was kind of a veering answer, like a pivot in the middle of being asked something else. He's like, by the way, one area I know he's going to be better, I'll add parenthetically because he was so bad with it last year.
Okay, well,
He's going to be a much better leader this year, and I know he's going to do that. So you can look at it as Wolf is trying to talk him up and be like, he's going to be a bigger part of our leadership because we got all the crummy leaders out of here, and Vrabel's already changing the locker room. We're going to empower Drake May. I mean, on some level, he's saying Drake May was not a leader last year. That doesn't make him a bad leader. But he's letting you know that's an area they need more out of him. And for Wolf to say, I know he's going to be better at it, you can guess. You have no idea.
No, we don't really know.
You have no clue.
Does every single quarterback have to be a leader?
I think they are by default.
I think they kind of have to be, actually. Yeah. Like, so there are arguments to be made, like, you know, in baseball, like, does your best player have to be a leader? Probably not. You know, like, there's just the nature of that sport, and as long as you have some leaders in there, I think you can get by. Basketball, honestly, I don't think either. Like, I think all the guys in the Celtics kind of lead their own way, but I think, like, Drew Holiday and Al Horford provide a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, not that Tatum and Brown don't, but, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not the clear cut, like, oh, you're the captain of the team. Football is a different beast. Like, I feel like if the quarterback isn't, I don't know how many examples there are of teams still being really good where that guy doesn't take that on.
Text line is already responding. He's certainly up to the task. Yeah, he's being questioned real hard. He was saying, if anything, rookies aren't providing leadership. I can see reading it that way. I just acknowledge that. I would point out again, he was asked about Drake May very generically going into year two, and he's like, oh, by the way, he's going to be a better leader.
Well, and so they also have to because they got rid of all of their leaders from last year.
Just seemed like an interesting thing to bring up. No one was asking him about leadership. No, and he's like, by the way, Drake will be a better leader. Interesting.
Yeah, unprovoked.
And I don't know. I still don't have a – I don't know how anybody feels like they have a good read on Drake May as a leader. I don't know how you do.
No, we don't.
And so if you want to say the jury's out, fine. I don't say how you could know. I would highlight the Joe Milton stuff as something I am questioning with Drake May as a leader on this team. And I would also point to him blowing off the media after the final game of the year, meaning like on breakup day on the Monday when Mayo was fired. Yeah, he's not there. He's not there answering questions. Mm-hmm. I didn't complain about it in real time. I didn't care when he didn't talk after the Buffalo game. Meaning at the podium, 4 o'clock or whatever it was that day. But those are a couple of small little things where it's like, boy, he didn't even talk to the media until yesterday.
No.
It had been months since we here in New England had a Q&A with him. And on top of that, Joe Milton's gone. So I do have little questions about his leadership. And for Elliot Wolf to bring that up unprompted to veer in the middle of a question about Drake May and his growth in year two, I found that interesting. But if you don't think he's questioning it, that's fine. 617-779-7937. Let me add this.
All right, please.
Greg Bedard on his podcast yesterday.
Yeah.
He's heard a little something about Joe Milton.
Really?
And, well, it's convenient now that Joe Milton's out of town.
Milton was here for a whole year, right?
Correct. Okay. Yeah, he was here the entire year. And I don't remember hearing any of this while he was a New England Patriot. Here's Greg Bedard on his podcast.
Joe Milton was, and this is like
direct quotes from somebody in the organization. Not a good dude. Knowing your role, playing your role, you know, being part of a harmonious quarterback room, that was going to be an issue. And it wasn't about Drake May. It was just about the room.
Wait a minute.
Not a good dude.
Not a good dude?
Bad dude.
So we heard none of that the whole year he was here.
Nope.
And then he's gone for a few weeks, and he's not a good dude?
Mm-hmm.
But then your examples are he didn't know his role.
Bad dude. Bad for the dynamics.
Once again, we're back to the same conversation we were before. He's a bad guy because he wanted to play. He's a bad guy because he thought maybe he could be a starter.
Uh-huh.
Again, I'm not comparing the two as far as like their playing style or their ability, but Tom Brady thought he could be a starter too as a 6th-round pick.
Yep.
And in fact, became a starter and became the greatest player of all time. I don't know why you wouldn't want anybody that was on the team and was like, yeah, I'm the backup. Like, I'm for sure the backup. Like, you know, you don't want to be popping off about it all the time if you're, say, Brian Hoyer or Jacoby Brissett or whoever the backup quarterback. You don't want to be popping off about it, but to not have confidence in yourself and then you're labeled a bad dude because you have confidence in yourself.
And how about going into your second year in the NFL when you won the same amount of games as the starter?
Right, right, right.
You won one.
Right.
Drake May won one. You were both on really crappy teams. Drake May turned it over all the time.
Technically, Drake May got the win.
I'm sorry.
He did technically.
One real victory.
Right.
And you led the team to as many wins as he did. Like,
that's like the year.
I don't think that's crazy at all. If it was like 10 years into Drake May's career, this kid comes in as a 6th-round pick. He's like, I'm going to be the starter. That is, by the way, what Brady did.
Yeah.
But I would get that a little more. Now he's a bad dude. So where do you think this is coming from, Keith?
The Patriots.
Yeah, who?
Obviously. McDaniels, Wolf, Vrabel.
Knowing Bedard, McDaniels is on the list.
Yeah.
But
you think Drake May? I don't think Drake May. I don't know if he's even like, talking to people like this.
Maybe not Drake May. What about Drake May's family?
Oh, I mean, it's possible because there was reports that they didn't like the draft
pick. How about the May camp?
Could be maybe the May camp.
Because now he's a bad guy. Not just like he was a distraction and but not, I think not it's good more for the room. Like now he's a bad guy.
But it's also, it's a way to explain away why they did what they did. Meaning like why McDaniels
justified it or
Vrabel or even Elliot Wolf, I guess, to be like, see, we kind of had to do it. He's a bad guy. See, we're better off for it. Like, think back to Washington. In the same draft, they had Robert Griffin III and Kirk Cousins. You think Kirk Cousins was like, I'm just the backup. That's my job. I'll only be the backup, and I'll never even try to be the starter. Like, no.
He's kind of doing that in Atlanta right now, but he's got his money.
He's got his cash. That is a really strange thing. So, yeah, I mean, Drake May, hopefully, whether Joe Milton was on the roster or not, was going to start week one and start and play every single game all the way through the end of the season, not get hurt, have a ton of success. But, yeah, that's just in the early going, just the stuff we have to base it off of. I don't know, something to look at.
Let me just say, it's very – no. For everybody who's like, you have no proof that Drake May is a bad leader, I guess we don't.
What's the proof that he's a bad guy?
Thank you. That's what I was just going to say. You have no proof Drake May is a good leader. Or a bad leader, rather. Okay, fine. You're right. I don't have a lot of proof. I question this Joe Milton thing over here. I question him not talking for months at a time, which I find odd. So at least I have some things to question. What do you have? What do you have for evidence that Joe Milton's a bad dude?
Apparently, he could play.
I guess you could point to the trade. But I would say that I didn't hear any of that while he was here, which seems awfully convenient. But I'm also not plugged in, Keith. What do I know?
Mm-hmm.
Greg Bedard, very plugged in over there in New England. Who's he talking to? Where is he getting that from? Why didn't he get it last year? I don't know. 617-779-7937. You can jump in here on Jones and Keith. We did our Friday 4-pack earlier this hour. You can check that out on the Audacy app, AUDACY. Get that on your phone. Free, easy. Take it with you wherever you go. We also did a Top 5 Friday. The people we're most worried about, that's up now on socials. You can check it out at Jones and Keefe on Twitter and on Instagram. Keefe, text line had a late submission.
Great one.
A glaring omission by you and I.
Yeah.
Mel Kiper.
We should be worried about Mel Kiper.
Mel Kiper.
That was a tough draft for him.
Mel Kiper.
That was a tough couple of days.
Very relevant, very topical.
Yeah,
just this week. Shows how stupid my brain is. I already forgot all about it.
Great
Mel
one.
Kiper is a great one to have on the list.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to add him as an honorable mention. But check that out, at Jones and Keefe. Again, Twitter and Instagram. Let's get back to the Celtics, the whole league. According to a top NBA insider, thinks the Celtics are about to make changes this offseason. We'll get to it next.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Friedman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The revolution redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colone for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.